British Spy Stories. Season 3. Official Denial. Episode 1. The beach at Navadari is cold this morning. As the dawn fades up far to the east, Gabby shivers and rubs her hands together. In the summer, this part of the Romanian coast of the Black Sea is packed with holidaymakers. But now, only two British spies and a crew of Royal Engineers are on the beach.
"How's it looking, Hans?"
she says.
Agent Hans is sitting on a field chair at a makeshift control centre. Four computer screens in front of him show the cameras and status of a maritime drone that sits just offshore.
"Couple of minutes, Mom. We've only got 15 minutes before our window closes."
"Aware, Mom."
Gabby walks over to a group of men sitting in a landing craft, pulled up on the sand 30 feet away, and directs her eyes to the officer in charge.
"Major, are your men ready?"
"As soon as your boy gets the drone off and pushes the button, we'll be ready to dismantle the control equipment and load it on board. Then we'll be out of here."
"How long's the journey back to Bulgaria?"
4 hours, Mom."
Gabby looks at her watch.
"It's an hour until sunrise."
"We're exposed after that," says the Major.
"You and your man can be picked up by a patrol boat sooner, though. You should be back on land in an hour or two."
Gabby walks back up the beach to Hans.
"Ready, Mum,"
he says, and clicks the mouse. The floating drone immediately roars into life in the open water. Hans turns a steering wheel in front of him on the console, and the drone obeys his commands, making a circle in the sea.
"Go ahead, Hans,"
she says, quietly. He presses the throttle on the console. The boat rises and heads off away from the beach. On the screen, they watch the video streams from the onboard cameras, one showing the beach disappearing into the distant darkness. Hans turns the craft northeast and opens her up to full power. Time seems to drag for the next 10 minutes. Nothing changes on the beach. The soldiers wait for their command. Gabby and Hans watch the drone cameras, and a green flashing blip on one of the screens shows where the boat has reached along its journey.
"How long until impact?"
3 minutes, Mum.
The green marker moves up until they can see the shadowy bulk of a long jetty up ahead in the boat's front camera. The outline gradually gains more detail and shows warehouses crowded around the landing point. The long stretch of the jetty is outlined on the screen now, pushing out into the cold, dark sea. Gabby moves away from the screens and looks across the water. It's peaceful here. The umbrellas and tables where families would have had their holidays in the summer are stacked neatly in rows of yellow and orange at the back of the beach.
90 seconds target, Mum,
says Hans across the distance between them. She walks back to his control point and looks at the central screen. The jetty is clear in the image now. One of the main legs of the structure crawls towards the middle of the camera's picture. Moonlight bounces off the surface of the water, which is squally this close to where the legs dive down into the Black Sea.
It's 30 seconds.
Gabby doesn't blink. Her pupils are large in the night. The soldiers on the beach start to stand now, waiting for their part in the next stage of the operation. She raises long-distance binoculars to her eyes and focuses on the jetty in the distance.
10 meters, Mum, says Hans. Permission to detonate.
Time stops in her mind. The seconds tick by. She makes one final check.
Detonate.
Hans pulls back a flip cover on the desk in front of him to reveal a red button. His eyes flick up to her for a moment, and she barely registers his finger pressing down before the sound and sight of the explosion cuts across the Romanian dawn. She raises her gaze as the white and yellow light explodes on the jetty. But there's no time to be a spectator.
"Let's move, Major,"
she calls out, and the soldiers run to the equipment in front of Hans and start to dismantle. He stands up and moves out of their way, and Gabby indicates to him for them both to get on the assault craft.
Within 3 minutes, the beach is empty again. The hardware stowed back in the boat. The Major makes one last check, then gives the command, and three sappers push the boat off the sand, then jump on board. The craft turns east to escape beyond the coastal currents, before turning south and on towards a rendezvous with a British patrol boat, to take the spies on board, back to dry land. October in London. The water of the River Thames forms a grey sheet beneath Vauxhall Bridge, as Sir Bernard McIntosh walks from where his chauffeur dropped him on the north bank. He walks vigorously across to the south bank and on towards 85 Albert Embankment, the headquarters of the British Secret Intelligence Service, MI6. As head of global operations, his presence in the reception area causes the security team to stand up a bit straighter and smile at him as he shows his pass card. The barriers glide silently open to let him through. A few minutes later, he emerges from the lift and walks up to one of the few doors on the top floor corridor of the building. A reader scans his iris in less than a second, and the door unlocks. For everyone else in the world, they must get to his office via Lawrence, his personal assistant, who has the office next door. Sir Bernard's office is 20 feet long, with three windows spaced equally along the wall, looking out to the water. The carpet is deep red and the furniture is mahogany. A large desk sits in front of one window, and two sofas lay in the middle of the room. Lawrence has left him a pot of tea and biscuits on a tray in the middle of the sideboard, under the central window. Sir Bernard hangs up his coat, leaves his case by the desk, and stands looking out at the Thames as he pours a cup of tea.
"Agent Blackhawk is here, sir,"
says Lawrence, from the interconnecting door between their offices.
"Thank you, Lawrence. Show her in. And bring another cup, would you?"
"Sir Bernard,"
says Gabby. She walks in holding an empty teacup and saucer.
"Lawrence gave me this."
She holds up the cup.
"Let me pour,"
he says. Then they sit on the sofas with their drinks, and he takes a gulp of the liquid before looking directly at her.
"Well done on the jetty."
"Thank you."
"Any difficulties?"
"No, all went to plan,"
she says.
"Royal Engineers good?"
"Very."
"They know their stuff,"
he says.
"Jetty was completely destroyed thanks to your efforts. It's a major piece of infrastructure for Europe's arms traders."
There's a pause while they coincidentally both drink.
"I said to you a couple of months ago, Gabrielle,"
he says,
"when we first spoke about the jetty, that I was thinking of you for some more work in that region."
"Yes, sir."
Sir Bernard opens a manila folder in front of him, picks up a number of photographs and places the pile between them on the table. The top image is of a man taken with a long-range lens eating in a restaurant. She looks down at the image.
"Makary Voroboyov,"
she says, and looks out. Sir Bernard spreads the other photos across the table.
"These are covert photographs of Voroboyov taken last week in Budapest. He has moved his base to there, to be closer to the new flows of demand that have come up with all that's happening in the East."
"He's one of the most dangerous arms traders out there,"
she says.
Sir Bernard nods. "The intelligence says that he's recently killed the leader of the second biggest arms operation in southern Europe. So that makes him number one now."
"Okay."
"We need to stop him," says Sir Bernard. "That's your operation."
He watches her eyes.
"An assassination?"
"His death is only one option," he says. "But there's another aspect to it. We've asked the Hungarians if we can mount an operation now that he's in Budapest, and they have declined."
"So we wait until he travels?"
"He doesn't travel," says Sir Bernard. "He has up to 100 associates who run his organization. He is very careful with his own personal security and rarely moves out of his base, wherever that is."
"But if the Hungarians are saying no?"
She looks at her boss, seeking answers. "We're going to mount an official denial operation," he says flatly.
MI6 operating in an EU nation without their approval?
Sir Bernard doesn't respond, but waits for her to think about the risks and the consequences.
"Officially, the operation won't exist and there'll be no permanent record of it," he says. "The PM will deny that MI6 are there at all if questions are asked."
"Is this mission being controlled from London?"
she says.
"The embassy in Budapest will need to be aware."
"But I'm the officer in charge, am I, sir?"
she says emphatically.
"You'll need to coordinate."
"Can't we run it from London?"
"It's too complicated, Gabrielle. I know you like working on your own, but sometimes it's not possible."
She looks glum.
"I'll need Agent Hans and Laravel, sir. And access to the sniper, Coniston."
"I'll get them allocated," he says. "You'll all officially be on an operation in Spain. The records of anything you do won't be traceable."
He sips his tea.
"There's one more thing."
And she looks at him.
"We've lost an asset."
"Who?"
"Victor Melnick. Agent Overbeck."
"What do you mean by lost, sir?"
"He disappeared 3 weeks ago."
"And he's a British spy?"
Sir Bernard nods.
"Originally a Russian national, but he's been working with us in Ukraine, feeding us whatever intelligence he can get through his network of Russians in the area."
"And we've got no idea where he's gone?"
"He told his handler, just before he disappeared, that he's been diagnosed with cancer," says Sir Bernard.
"You think there's a link between his disappearance and the illness?"
"Possibly. I need you to find him, Gabrielle."
"He could have been captured by the Russians," says Gabby.
"Agreed. We just don't know."
"How does this fit in with the Voroboyov operation?"
"Agent Overbeck was spotted 2 days ago."
He pauses.
"In Budapest."
She nods.
"I'll need access to his personal file, sir."
Sir Bernard picks up a sheaf of papers from the folder.
"I thought you'd ask for it."
He held it up to her, and she takes it from him.
"Anything else, Black Hawk?"
"No, thank you, sir."
"You better get going," he says.
She stands, gives Sir Bernard one last glance, then turns and walks out. After rising in the Lusatian Mountains, the River Spree cuts northwest through Germany before reaching the Spandau district of Berlin. Schiff Bauerdammstrasse sits on the north bank of the river, right in the centre of the city. Gabby knows this street very well because the Met Bar sits at one end. This place has been an MI6 meeting place for decades. Until the wall went down, it had been on the border between East and West Berlin, and was used as part of the escape route for people coming into the West. Now, the barman is Agent Hans, under deep cover. Gordon Rathbone, as he is known to his parents, is one of the few people she trusts in MI6.
"Hello,"
she says, as she sits on a stool at the bar.
"How are you?"
"Just thinking of our nighttime activities, Gab."
"Sir Bernard says thank you."
"I'll tell my mother."
She smiles, and he puts a bottle of beer in front of her.
"You close at 9, don't you?"
she says.
"Yeah, why?"
"We're having a meeting."
"Oh, yes,"
he says.
"Who with?"
"Your favourite everyday spy,"
she says, and opens her eyes wide.
"Laravel,"
she nods.
"Anyway, she rejected me, you know that. I've given up on her now,"
he says.
"I'm going to follow your approach with relationships and have a bar so high that no one on earth could ever possibly get over it."
"Glad to hear it. I don't want you in love when we're in a war zone."
Hans takes a swig from his beer bottle, and his face looks excited.
"I'll tell you later,"
she says. The last of the paying customers push out into the evening rain as 9 o'clock approaches. Gabby and Hans take their drinks and sit at a large round table near the window. The water streaks down the glass outside, and they talk about their times together, saving chat about their next mission until their guest arrives. The bell above the door signals someone entering from the street. The rain has continued to pour down on Berlin. A young woman comes in with her hood pulled up. She pushes it back and smiles at them. She has large eyes and a mop of dark hair. Agent Larivelle sits down, and Hans pushes a beer bottle over to her. After 5 minutes of casual chat, Gabby clears her throat.
Right, as of now, we three are allocated to Operation Millport, she begins. If you go and look on the MI6 Oberon operational database, Operation Millport aims to improve the security for the Spanish government, and we've been asked to help them address a number of weaknesses in the operations in and around Madrid.
The other two look half bemused and half disappointed.
Why do they need us? Says Larivelle. Aren't there resources in Spain to do that?
Gabby puts up her palm.
Millport is not that at all. That's just what it says on the system. What Millport is going to do will be denied by the British government.
Why?
Says Hans.
Because?
She pauses.
It's in an EU member state without their knowledge.
Hans and Larivelle stay silent.
The main operation is the disruption of Europe's largest arms network. Hans, I'll need some research on the gang leader.
Who is it?
Makary Voroboyov. And where are we going? Hungary. You said the main operation?
Says Larivelle.
Is there another one? We also need to do a locate and extract on an MI6 asset who's disappeared from their station and has surfaced in Budapest.
Have you got a plan? Says Hans.
The disruption should be easy enough once we locate where Voroboyov is staying in Budapest. We don't know enough about the disappearance yet. It's secondary to the Voroboyov op. We can plan it more when we get there. There's an option that Sir Bernard mentioned,
continues Gabby.
If the disruption doesn't work, then he's got pre-approval for a kill order. But let's see, we might not need that.
Will the spooks in the British Embassy in Budapest be aware of Millport? Says Hans.
Aware, yes, but involved, no,
she says.
It's our operation, not theirs.
Hans and Larivelle exchange a wordless glance. A raw wind cuts up from the river to where Marjorie Allardyce stands half in and half out of the side doorway to St. Paul's Cathedral. From her vantage point, she has a clear view down St. Peter's Hill, the road that leads to the Millennium Bridge and over the Thames. Of all the Russian locations in London, St. Paul's is one that Marjorie prefers, as she feels safer here than in some of the places where Russian agents meet their handlers. She's had 4 handlers in her time with the SVR, Russia's MI6. 3 of them had gone back to Moscow and not returned. Then, within a week, another new face had made themselves known to her and told her that they were now her only communications route in and out of the SVR headquarters. Her current handler, Maxime, is the gentlest of all of them. The old attitude left over from the Soviet era and the KGB has gradually changed over the years as Russia has become more outward-looking. She sees him on the far side of the road and watches him negotiate the traffic and climb the steps to the stone doorway.
Valentina,
he says, using her SVR code name.
Hello, Maxine.
They speak English to blend into the background of everyday life in London. His greying hair is slicked back with hair tonic over a round face and thick nose. His brown eyes are lively behind glasses with thick black frames.
You're looking well, Radnaya.
She smiles, a little uncomfortably.
Let's walk. It's too cold to be standing still.
They turn north, cross King Edward Street, and head for the net of narrow roads around St. Bartholomew's Hospital. After half an hour, they buy coffees and sit outside a cafe on the corner of Smithfield Market. The place is quiet after the dawn bustle of meat traders, who would have been here and gone again before most people had started their day.
"You know that you're seen as a central part of the fight, don't you, Valentina?" he says. "There are no more important SVR agents in Britain than you."
She smiles at him but waits for more.
"The information that you have provided in the last 2 years, particularly, has been very well received."
"Thank you, Maxime."
"Now I have been asked to talk to you about a high-priority operation."
He looks deadly serious, suddenly.
"There was an unfortunate accident the other day at a port that we have been using to move military equipment."
"Where was that?"
she says.
"On the Black Sea. We believe that MI6 were involved, and our friends who own this facility want to know more."
"If it's MI6, Maxine, I don't have full access. I'm MI5, so I can only see the UK operations."
"I'm sure you can help us, Valentina."
"I'll check, but..."
"We can't go back with nothing,"
he interrupts her. There is suddenly more force in his voice, and she can see fear behind his watery eyes. She touches the back of his hand.
"I know, Maxime. I'll find us something."